Kia ora, welcome to Power Up Podcast, powered by Venture Taranaki and produced by Raw Collective. We're celebrating the success of remarkable Taranaki entrepreneurs, highlighting their stories and showcasing the best of work and play in this exceptional region. This season, we're talking to trailblazing enterprise owners and founders in energy, tech and well-being, beverage crafters, commercial developers, and digital storytellers. And it's no exaggeration to say that some are genuine world leaders in their fields, pioneering positive global change while living the famous Taranaki like no other lifestyle. I'm your host, David Downs. Let's discover why Taranaki is a region where unique natural and business environments collide, enabling people to flourish both at work and home. No mai, haere mai, we welcome you to hear our enterprising future like no other. Throughline is the largest, most reliable network of verified mental health helplines in the world. It has more than 1,400 helpline options across more than 100 countries, helping people in crisis connect to the right helpline for them. It was founded by Elliot Taylor, aiming to make support more accessible. Research has shown the huge difference that helplines can make, but Elliot saw a need to make them more available for the people who need them. The impact Throughline has had on global scale is a considerable achievement. It's yet another can-do story about a Taranaki entrepreneur recognising a situation and being committed to doing something about it. Elliot, good morning.
Kia ora.
Where have you come from this morning?
Near-ish Midhurst.
Midhurst being like halfway between here and Stratford.
So halfway between Stratford and Inglewood, actually.
Let's be precise on these.
Yeah, but even then, we're just shy of Midhurst. I'm technically in out the back of Tariki.
Right.
But I mean, I figure if you live in New Zealand, then your location really is defined by your nearest dairy.
Yeah. So where do you get your milk from is probably the question.
Yeah, so for us, that's Midhurst.
Midhurst dairy.
And fortunately, they also have the best hot chips in the land.
And the entire of New Zealand. That's a bold call.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah,
that's a good shout out for Midhurst Dairy.
I mean, it may just be because it's proximate, but we are big fans and frequent customers.
Good on you. Now, tell me about you before you set up Throughline. What were you doing?
I'm a Taranaki boy. I was born and raised here in New Plymouth. And yeah, after my life here, I worked in the nonprofit sector for about 15 years. Nice. Most of my time there was working for a youth organisation called Zeal, who works in youth development. They have youth centres across the country. The most recent one, actually, down the road here in New Plymouth.
Nice.
In the old Empire building. So, yeah, I worked there for a long time, working in creative arts youth development. And then it was in my kind of latter stages of that work, I started exploring the intersection of young people, mental health, technology, and that's kind of what's
brilliant.
Led me more into building a kind of technology startup now.
Which is super cool. And from what I've heard of Throughline, it sounds like it really solves a real need. You know, what's the elevator pitch for Throughline?
So we're a company on a mission to support people experiencing an emotional crisis, but on a global scale. And so the way we do that is through a product called Find a Helpline, which is a aggregator of free mental health and crisis helplines in over 100 countries.
Yeah.
And so we make it easy for someone that's experiencing an emotional crisis. So we're talking things like suicide, anxiety, depression, sexual abuse, domestic violence, for that person to be able to connect with a real human in their country that can support them in that moment, either over phone or over text message or online chat.
So you're sort of solving the information gap, where helplines might exist, but the people that need to find them can't because it's difficult and there's lots of numbers, and so you're kind of aggregating.
That's right. So it's about access. These services, all the services we list, are services that already exist, but the accessibility of them has been a significant ongoing problem online. And, you know, as people turn to the internet more and more in times of emotional crisis, we saw this opportunity to do better at connecting those people to help. Because if you can increase that accessibility, reduce the barriers, just make it easier, that means more people get help, right? It's difficult when you're in an emotional crisis to access help. Like, it's a hard thing to do.
It is. Asking for help is very difficult.
So we have to do everything we can to reduce those barriers and make it easier.
You've had experience in sort of the mental health sector in the past with Zeal and other organisations?
Yeah, so I'm not like formally trained. I'm not like a kind of psychologist or counsellor or anything like that. But I've been working with young people who are experiencing mental health struggles or mental distress for about 15 years. starting for me, I fell into a situation in my early 20s supporting a close friend of mine who had a really serious self-harm addiction. I'd never really at once felt so transcendent, like I was kind of connected to something greater than myself, but also so grounded, you know, when you're with someone else who you love dearly and also who's struggling so much. And so that really was the start of a path that's led me in just being open, having open hands to entering spaces of crisis and distress with people. And so I'm not an expert, but our kind of product is built off the back of that, the idea that a person with some training in how to have a supportive conversation can actually make a meaningful difference to someone who is struggling with their mental health.
Yeah. Does research show that helplines and talking to people is a valid kind of intervention for those that need it?
Yeah. So when you're in an emotional crisis, you're in your fight or flight mode.
Yeah.
So it's like your foot's on the accelerator and you need to figure out a way to slow down. So research shows us that conversation, particularly conversations where we feel heard and validated when people show care and help us unpack our story, that can help us move from that crisis to calm moment and then also help us be in a position where we're able to figure out a plan forward. That's what helplines provide. A key part of that as well is that helplines are confidential and anonymous services. And so what it means is that people can access these services when essentially they have things to talk about that they're scared about talking about elsewhere. And we all have that stuff. I've contacted helplines myself. And so, they're there for that purpose.
That's fantastic. But as we said earlier, part of the issue, therefore, is just remembering the number when you need it. Or, I mean, in New Zealand, for example, we have, is it 1737, I think, for one of the many helplines, I'm sure. So in that state, remembering and dialing and finding it is difficult. So your organisation, I suppose, what's the user experience, I guess? You know, if I'm experiencing an episode or feeling a mental health crisis, how might I use your service?
Mm. So, we worked really hard to optimise that and we continue to over time. We started with paper prototypes, you know, on the streets of West Auckland with fat marker sketches and walking out on the street and getting people to interact with bits of paper and getting their feedback and kind of iterate over time.
Yeah.
What it looks like today is, you come to findahelpline.com, you start typing your country. We've built some technology that will identify where you're from, so it makes it really easy for you to find that. So there's, you know, you're not spent scrolling. And then you're shown a list of topics. So you select what topic or topics you want support with. About a third of our users are struggling with suicidal thoughts, and that's quite imminent. So that's provide that as a quick link button. So you select that topic or topics and then click search. And then we show you helpline cards, which are basically information about all the different helplines available to you. But as opposed to it being like kind of a glorified Google Doc, which is how most of the stuff has been done previously, it's structured more like a kind of a marketplace, like say if you were to look at something on Yelp or something like that, where the helpline cards are kind of all laid out with a similar kind of structure. And then on each card, we have contact buttons. So you don't have to like type in a number or that type of thing. You just kind of click a button and then
access support. Facilitates an email or a chat or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. And so a key part of this as well is the prioritization. So with so many services, you know, we list over 1,400 verified services. It's trying to figure out like how do you make sure the stuff that's at the top is the most relevant so people aren't like having to like dig for the right thing. And so, we've put a lot of work into improving that. And these days we use a piece of third-party tech that has kind of AI behind it and kind of re-rank services according to popularity. And so all of that really is about us essentially increasing conversion rates. Like that's our metric is going, how good are we at taking a person who's in an emotional crisis and getting to them to the point where they are feeling confident enough to take action.
I love that you're using some of the modern kind of algorithms and thought processes around how you optimize, because I mean, a lot of it is used to sell you a soundbar or something like that, or, you know, get you onto some sort of ad website, whereas what you're doing is using it for purpose, which is great.
Thank you. I really couldn't do it any other way.
Yeah.
Like, I am fascinated by technology. I love it. But I am deeply motivated by how we can apply it to real-world problems that make a difference in people's lives.
Yeah.
And we're a company. We have a vision to build a successful, you know, profitable and growing business. And we see a significant overlap with that and with the mission that we have. And part of the reason we're doing this our way is because we actually believe by building a really successful startup that is the path for us to have the greatest impact in the world.
Yeah.
And that probably also comes from my background working in the nonprofit and, you know, some of the kind of the deep frustrations and brokenness that sits within that system.
So you mentioned there, I mean, you are a business, therefore you have to at least make money to pay for your own costs and things like that. But the user experience is not that they pay for that necessarily, the end user. That wouldn't be a great one, I'm sure. But so how do you monetize the visits to the website and things?
So when we started developing this, a key part of our motivation was we recognized that large tech companies, particularly ones with global user bases, increasingly felt this duty to support their users. So this came from like an ethical standpoint with a large amount of users and lots happening on their platform, really feeling like you need to support those users. And then increasingly there's also political pressure and there's now actually legal pressure. And so we take our product and we help those companies by integrating it to support their users. So I can share kind of a use case if that...
Yeah, that'd be good.
That's
yep.
useful. So would you be familiar with the writing tool Grammarly?
Yes.
Yeah.
Use Grammarly.
Yeah.
Corrects all my bad spelling, but converts it to American. So I'm not sure I'm using it correctly, but anyway.
Which is also ironic because they're a Ukrainian company.
Oh, okay.
Originally.
Damn, I should write in Ukrainian next time.
Or so Grammarly noticed that they would have a subset of users that might be talking about suicide with their product, right? So they're using AI to be able to look over your writing and to be able to give you guidance. If you're writing about something that might be sensitive or if you need support, they wanted to ensure that that person had that option.
Yeah.
So we work with Grammarly to ensure that people, when they are talking about suicide, that they have the option to be able to access support and that's made available to them in real time.
It's like a pop-up that might happen and said, you know, it looks like you might need some help.
Yeah, so it's like if you think about your normal Grammarly user interface and how it's telling you about your spelling or your grammar or that type of thing, it's within that same user interface, but as opposed to telling you about a spelling error, it's encouraging you to be able to access support. You can dismiss that if you like, but a lot of that's about making it accessible and having it in real time and making it easy for people who might be needing help.
That's a beautiful example. And you can see the benefits for everybody in that. And obviously there's a commercial relationship or something between you and Grammarly to make sure that they can offer that service. But that's not forced on people. It's just an option. What a cool example of tech for good. Yay, I love it. Oh, God, I love this sort of thing. So how do you measure your success? Is it the number of people who successfully find a service, the number of visits that you have in the first place? Like, how would you measure impact?
I view this stuff as like a kind of a cascade of metrics. And so like ultimately our North Star is the amount of people that feel better after a conversation.
That's the lovely outcome.
Yes.
But yeah, there's indirect measures on the way to that.
Yeah, because that's about the impact in someone's life, right?
Yeah.
And then there's a whole bunch of metrics that help us get there. So, you know, metrics around our acquisition, the amount of users we have, our conversion rate from taking those users to people who end up contacting a helpline, which is one of the main things we measure the most is our number of helpline contact actions.
Right.
But then, you know, like I said, our main goal is people feeling better after the conversation. And so, you know, we're also increasingly doing a lot of work on the discrepancy between people who take an action to contact a helpline and whether or not they follow through on that action, have a conversation, whether or not there's other barriers that they're experiencing and the experience. So that's the kind of gap we're trying to close now.
Yeah. And again, I can see how you use kind of modern thinking about performance marketing because you're talking about a funnel. Sorry, we're getting a bit nerdy here. I love this stuff. You know, of awareness to, you know, interest to conversion and then action and then measuring that, you know, how many people went through that and what actions were taken. And there's sort of a lot of metrics now around that and ways of measuring that, you know, using modern tech. So it sounds like you've turned all that again to good.
Yeah, and I'm not scared of it. I certainly feel like, again, going back to some of my experience in the nonprofit, sometimes there can be a cynicism about using more business thinking.
Yeah.
But to me, it's all about using whatever tools are at your disposal to increase your goal.
Yeah.
And your goal might be just directly revenue, or your goal might be trying to make an impact in some way.
Yeah.
And what particularly technology startups have done is they've actually done a good job, I think, probably in the last decade, you know, longer, at wedding those two things where, you know, really, really good technology startups, like they all have a metric that represents the value that they deliver to a customer or a user. And then that metric also kind of bridges to their revenue metric. Because it's not just enough to increase revenue if that's not actually delivering more value, because that doesn't create a business that can be resilient over time. And so that's what I'm inspired by. And that's, you know, that's why I think when we think about like the amount of people who feel better after a conversation, it's like, well, if we can increase that, then that makes us a really resilient business, because we know that for all of that to happen, you know, our revenue will actually have to be increasing in order for that to happen as well.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you have, or you list services in over 100 countries. That's obviously a very big job to just maintain that much information, 1,400 entries or whatever it was. How do you keep track of the data, making sure that those helplines are still active and valid and that sort of thing? There's obviously a quality assurance almost piece to that.
Certainly.
Tell us about that process.
It has been a journey. I guess like anything, you start with the laziest option. Like when we began, it was a Google spreadsheet. These days, we have a kind of pretty advanced CRM that's purpose-built for our needs.
Yeah.
And then we have a whole bunch of kind of bits of technology that just give us varying levels of insight. So we have a reviews feature within our product, so we're able to see the behavior of users, and that gives us insight into what services are performing well and what aren't. And then we have like a automated like verification pipeline, where we work with helplines to keep their information up to date. They fill in a form and that type of thing. And so this technology enables us to be able to do that at scale with hundreds or, you know, over 1,000 helplines across the world.
Well, yeah, and that was my, I guess that's my question, because as soon as you start growing, you get a need for greater, your team has to maybe grow. Have you had to grow, I suppose, in relation to the growth of the business?
Yeah, we have. For a long time, I was doing this largely solo, but we've had an exciting journey over the last 18 months in particular. So we participated in an accelerator called Startmate, one of two Taranaki companies, ourselves and Energy Bank.
Yeah.
We were in the same cohort, the first companies to ever be in that. And then off the back of that, we built some relationships with investors and raised a seed round, a pre-seed round. And so I've kind of built out a small team off the back of that. So now there's four full-timers, which is really exciting.
That's
for
huge.
I mean, I've been building kind of technology solutions, I guess, as a product manager for a number of years, but never in all my time of doing that have I ever had like a full-time developer on the team. And so that was one of the things that was like the most exciting for me. So now we've got, this amazing dev who also has incredible product and people management expertise. And so, the pace at which we can move and experiment and stuff is, it's awesome.
Just radically increased. Fantastic. Yeah. So that those investors that came in, that's amazing. They're obviously sort of social impact investing as well as wanting a profit. They obviously love what you're doing in terms of business.
Yeah, a bit of both. We have certainly some like impact investors on our cap table. So ones from here in New Zealand and Australia as well. And then we also have other just more profit-driven venture capital investors as well.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, then that means they're seeing something really big in what you're proposing.
I think it's about the size of the problem.
Yeah.
There's an increasing awareness of the importance of providing mental health support for people in crisis.
Yeah.
If you look in the last decade, the number of people experiencing stuff is just going up.
Yeah.
And we need to have more innovative solutions. And so, like, we're certainly still at the start of our journey, and there's a lot still for us to achieve, but it's a really big problem. And so if we can build something that meaningfully makes an impact, there's a big opportunity.
That's right. I mean, it's sort of the saying in the startup world is find a big problem, start small and go fast. And that sounds like what you're doing. So you're four people now. Are they all based in Taranaki as well, or are you spread far and wide?
No, so I'm the only one
head office, global headquarters.
Yeah, global Midhurst headquarters. And out the back of Midhurst.
Well, there'll be a plaque there one day.
Maybe, cows grazing out my window. And the rest of our team is based in Auckland.
Right.
So I head up there probably every 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And spend a week up there with them. We all work remotely. It works well. It's definitely a muscle that you have to build.
Yeah.
And I think having the face-to-face time to build some human rapport is really good, but it works for us. And I think one of the things, especially when you're hiring, you have to kind of consider is like the quality of the talent and their location and that type of thing.
Yeah.
One of the benefits of remote working is you can kind of get talent from anywhere. So it means that when I'm thinking about the future of our business, like I'm not as restricted as thinking like, everyone has to be based in one location.
It's dairy. Yeah. But I love this. You're a great example, because I've often thought Taranaki is a wonderful place to build a tech company from, but not needing to have all of the pieces here because you don't. You could have people all around the world. So, you know, you seem to be exemplifying that kind of lifestyle meets business because clearly there's something about Taranaki that's keeping you here. You like it. You love it, you know. It's not just the chips at the dairy.
And it's also, like, I've got this little poster that sits on my computer screen which just says, like, it's all an experiment. And I think that's, in particularly in startups, that's something that's important to recognize is that startups are supposed to be new businesses solving hard problems at pace, and there's a lot of risk involved.
Yeah.
So it means that each day is an experiment, each thing you do, you're running experiments, but also the business as a whole is an experiment. And for me, one of those pieces of that experiment is the being based in Taranaki, the kind of, can we do this from here? Certainly 5 years ago, it wouldn't even been possible then to think that I'm someone based here and I raised a fairly healthy pre-seed round and we have some pretty big name clients in other parts of the world. Couldn't have happened 5 years ago, but we're doing it today. And 5 years ago, people would have said, oh, you can only ever build this kind of stuff if you're in Silicon Valley. Where I really believe that there's a democratization of the ability to build technology companies happening all around the world. And I want to see that and I want to be a part of that because I think what we also then need is that talent and heart, like going back to regions and not just here in Aotearoa, but all around the world.
Yeah. How is it when some of your clients or contacts or partners around the world find out that you're A, from Aotearoa, New Zealand, B, from Taranaki, C, from just outside the Midhurst Dairy? I mean, how do they look at that? Is it a positive, a negative, or an irrelevant factor to them?
I would say irrelevant, largely. I mean, they would have no idea where Midhurst is or where Taranaki is. The fact that we're in New Zealand has some sort of novelty factor to it. Largely, it's okay. I think the largest challenge we have is in building new relationships, like where you have a good rapport with a company and can get a new deal over the line. And so that means that, you know, for me, I'm trying to offset that another way. So actually, this coming weekend, I'm off to the States for 3 months. And a key part of that is to build relationships with companies that we think we might be able to add value to with our product, which is just, you know, more difficult to do over a over a Zoom call.
New relationships.
Yeah. Once you've got that relationship, like we've got a you know, really major client that we work with who we're in daily conversation with them, and their team is based in Australia and the US. And we've also, you know, worked with team members in Israel. And, you know, we've got an ongoing relationship, so it works.
Yeah.
Like those companies are very much used to that these days as well. And ironically, I've found myself sometimes jumping on a call, having a conversation with someone, being like, hey, this is where I live. And they're like, oh, yeah, I live out the back of some other random place in the US as well. So I do think there's a trend.
Yeah. Well, that, and it's a great trend, isn't it? That is to say that, like, kind of allowing access for all, but it's sort of parallels exactly your business, which is allowing access for all or trying to make it easier for people. So that's great. Let's talk about the impact you're having from Taranaki.
It's kind of funny because we're based here. I'm on this 15-acre piece of land, but we've built this product that not only connects people to help all around the world, but is relied on or used by lots of significant companies or organizations. And I think that's almost, it's almost ironic, or I don't know if that's the right word, like we have this partnership with the International Association for Suicide Prevention, and so they have a vast network of people that we're sending people to a resource, like people like, you know, BBC, Al Jazeera, Twitter, Tumblr, you know, all that kind of thing. We partner with them to actually send users to our resource. So now, like, we have users from all over the world get directed to us. Last year, I think it was World Mental Health Day, we saw our search traffic rankings like just skyrocket. We were like, what's going on here? And we like dug deep and it was like, oh, YouTube's tweeted us.
Wow.
Which was just kind of strange. I guess that's part of what's exciting and it shows you can kind of do this stuff from anywhere. Like we, for the small niche we're in, we are the most prominent, most used tool of its kind.
What's the future bring for you for Three Lines? Where are you going to take this business?
We are on a journey of trying to close that gap between people who take some sort of action to access support and feel better as a result of a conversation. And so we're exploring and running a lot of experiments about what that might look like.
Yeah.
There's kind of two parts of that. One is us considering like what role conversational AI may play in that. We have some hopeful thoughts and some critical ones.
It's not about hooking it up to ChatGPT and letting people have at it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, the key consideration for us that we're discerning and putting a lot of thought and research into is whether or not a person in distress receives support in the same way.
Yeah.
A lot of what's talked about with like conversational AI for mental health will like laud the ability for something to communicate in an empathetic way. But we think there's something about being organic matter that matters to people. So we're interested in that. And then we're also interested in whether or not there is a low-cost, scalable way to provide direct support to people ourselves. So we're noticing significant inequities globally. And we also notice that, so because we aggregate these services all over the world, we're kind of dependent on how that service delivers themselves. So we list services across phone, SMS or text message and online chat, but the majority of our users prefer to talk over online chat, but still most helplines in the world don't offer that service.
Ah.
And so we're trying to figure out, well, how can we make that happen?
You'd be an intermediary.
Either ourselves or through them, or because we know that that's a really, really significant barrier. It also increases the ability for us to be able to have deeper partnerships with companies, because if you're, there's a significant context switch that happens if, say, you're on a social media platform and you're in a crisis and you're served up, say, a helpline number. You know, you think you're 15-year-old sitting in your room, you're probably not going to click that number and have a phone call.
Most 15-year-olds don't actually talk to people on the
phone. That's right. That's right. And so for us, it's thinking about how we can build a product that is a little bit more fit for our modern times and the needs of current users.
Brilliant. I love that you are bringing technology to these problems, which arguably some of these problems are created by technology. So particularly that sort of, the pressure of social media and other things. And so you really, it's a beautiful closed loop. I've got some final questions for you. Quick fire, what's your dream day in Taranaki?
I am a sucker for the snow. So Taranaki on a beautiful day is lovely, but I actually really love that beautiful day if it is freezing cold and there's been a huge dumping the night before.
Yeah, nice.
We live about 30 minutes away from the Manganui ski field.
The club field.
Yeah, which actually the Manganui Gorge is where our river begins. We have a river on our property. So, it's almost like I like to go up and see the snow when it's first landed so then I can then say hi to it again when it passes by my house. So that's what I love the most. And then, come home, warm up, come into New Plymouth and grab some gamma rays for tea.
Nice. Very good. Shout out there. Mid-hysteria now, gamma rays. Okay. What's the best thing about living and working in Taranaki?
Just outside. Being outside. I think everyone in Taranaki feels like the mountain is theirs in some way.
Yeah.
It's none of ours. It's owned by the land and we're, I guess, caretakers of it. I love how it's changeable every day. I can look out my window and, on our family chat, there's always different photos going around of how the maunga looks today.
That's right.
I love the natural environment. That's the biggest highlight for me.
And last question, if someone out here is listening and thinking about their own mental health, what is a good thing that they can do today, I suppose, to build that resilience or address any challenges that they might be having? Obviously, visit findahealthline.com, but...
Helpline.
Findahelpline.com, sorry, pardon, yes. But, what's your sort of go-to mental health thing to de-stress?
Well, there's a lot in that question.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'd say is two things. One, and almost opposite ends of the spectrum. One is that we know that feeling connected and like we belong with other people has a really significant impact on our mental health. And so, however you're feeling today, if you're doing good or you're having a really hard day, like just connecting with people in your life that matter to you and having those connections where you feel like it's authentic.
Yeah.
That might be having an important conversation, or it might just be sitting down and hanging out and, sharing some kai. At the other end of the spectrum, there's also a number of, I guess, personal reflective activities that are just so helpful for people, whether that's, just going for a walk or meditating or journaling. Sometimes our emotional life, like all these things happen in our day and we don't really get a moment to surface that and to process it. And then it can kind of just lurk down there and fester. So that's the thing that helps me a lot, is making sure that I have thinking time and I can kind of process what's going on for me.
Brilliant. Elliot, thank you so much for sharing your story and your wisdom. Awesome to have you here. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Thanks so much for listening, and a special thanks to Venture Taranaki for making the Power Up podcast possible. If you're an entrepreneur or looking to get a new venture off the ground in Taranaki, visit the Venture Taranaki website and their business support services on offer that could help you bring your idea to life. If you're not familiar with Taranaki, come and take a look. There's something here for everyone. With a supportive business community, vibrant towns, unrivaled experiences, and abundant nature, Taranaki is humming. Your entrepreneurial flair, enterprise, and career will flourish here, and you and your family can make Taranaki your home. Lastly, please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps others find us.